Hello and welcome once again to The Buzz, presented by BumblingBees.net. As always, I am your host, Darian Sumner, and today we're going to talk about science. Science is much in the news right now, what with these somewhat ridiculous marches going on across the country. Yes, kids, we all know that you effing love science, but what is it that you in fact effing love? Well, if it's to be understood correctly from what they're protesting about, protests for science, can you imagine that? What they love about it is government funding. And why wouldn't they? They're the beneficiaries of the government funding. In fact, I see an article today in NPR talking about all the challenges that the lack of government funding is causing for science and how lack of government funding is leading to bad science. Indeed, I see the line, "Sometimes scientists adopt sloppy practices that can lead to false conclusions. This can hamper progress in science, and taxpayer dollars are on the line." Think about that for a minute. What do you suppose are the chances that NPR is looking at that and concluding, well, maybe taxpayer dollars shouldn't be on the line? Maybe if the government is getting such lousy science, then maybe people should not be compelled to pay for it. What do you suppose are the chances NPR reaches that conclusion? Let's look a little bit farther into the article. Why? Why are these people falsifying the science? Why are they hampering progress? Why are they engaging in sloppy practices? Well, we see farther on, in a quote from C.K. Gonzalez, director of the National Center for Professional and Research Ethics at the University of Illinois, that there are strong career incentives to bend the rules, by exaggerating accomplishments in a grant proposal, for example. Gonzalez says, "One of the rules in life is if you reward bad conduct, you're going to get a lot more bad conduct. Because even people with PhDs can figure out what you're rewarding and say, ooh, if that's what it takes to get ahead, I can do that." Isn't that just the case? If you're going to be paying people to produce specific results, you're going to get those specific results, and if you're going to be paying people just to produce bulk results, you're just going to get bulk results. Science that's funded by a private entity, for example, a pharmaceutical company, for the purpose of researching new pharmaceuticals, generally doesn't suffer from this problem. Not too many of Merck's research scientists, for example, will just falsify their results and report entirely specious things to Merck, because they're going to lose their jobs in a heartbeat if they do that. These people who are falsifying results are generally either working for the government or they are grad students in government science programs. The government is not an entity that should be pursuing science on my dime and on your dime, or we're going to get a lot more of this. Now let's talk about incentives. If I am to open a science lab, and say I'm an oil company, in which you know I am, and I fund a study that shows that oil is just terrific, and it's the best living room decoration, and you should spread it on your toast in the morning, and it's just great in coffee, and everyone should buy an awful lot more crude oil. And you look at that study, what are you going to conclude? Are you going to conclude that this study is probably on the level, because why would I lie? Or are you going to say, wait a minute, I'm trying to sell you oil? Probably this study is slanted by the fact that I want you to buy oil, so I'm not paying my scientists for results that say that oil is bad, now am I? We can all see that. We can all see that when tobacco companies put out studies that say that smoking is good for your health, that there's probably a little bit of a bias baked into that study. For some reason, people seem to be unable to determine that when the government is paying for a study, and that study returns the conclusion that we need more government, or that the government needs to be more heavily involved in something, like, just to take a random example, perhaps climate change, that perhaps the government has an ulterior motive here. That perhaps the government is paying for science that says we need more government and does not pay or does not pay as much for science that does not conclude we need more government. Why would this be shocking? And yet people don't seem to be able to understand it. It's not just that we're paying for science that is actively evil, that says that we actively need to have more government that's more activist and is doing more horrible things to us. We're also paying for an awful lot of useless science. There is an awful lot of peer-reviewed literature out there in the world that absolutely nobody is ever going to read, that was paid for by taxpayers, and that is completely useless. Just in a few minutes of looking around tonight, and I am heavily indebted to the Real Peer Review Twitter account for this help, I was able to find this wonderful paper from the University of Sussex, paid for by the British people, not by me, called Six Propositions on the Sonics of Pornography. What important research do you suppose this turned up? Well, let's quote from the abstract. "This speculative article maps out some of the ways in which the sounds of pornography, and the pornography of sound, might be approached in the analytical context of gay male culture. Not only do the texts of porn contain assorted sounds, dialogue, soundtracks, nonverbal noises of participation, background, and accidental audio, they also seek to prompt sounds, not least the nonverbal noises pornography seeks to elicit during the moments of its consumption, and sometimes depend on sound alone, telephone lines that allow access to recorded narratives or live chat. Pornography speaks in particular accents, it mobilizes particular music, it dances to particular tunes, and it relies on the pants we hear as much as the pants we see. If queer cultures have their own distinctive worlds of sound, then the sonic armories of porn play a prominent role within them. Is that something you think we should all be paying more for? Does that improve civilization that you and I were forced at gunpoint to fund things like this? Obviously not. This is just make-work projects for people who don't actually want to get a job. Anybody can see this. This is not even the worst of it. There is an entire field of science that's sprung up over about the last 10 years, called autoethnography. Now, you've probably never heard of autoethnography. You didn't take an autoethnography class in high school, no doubt. You took, you know, biology, physics, chemistry. So what would autoethnography be? Well, autoethnography is a form of self-reflection and writing that explores the researcher's personal experience and connects this autobiographical story to wider cultural, political, and social meanings and understandings. It differs from ethnography, a qualitative research method in which a researcher uses participant observation and interviews in order to gain a deeper understanding of a group's culture, in that autoethnography focuses on the writer's subjective experience rather than, or in interaction with, the beliefs and practices of others. So, basically, autoethnography is navel-gazing that's paid for by government grants. It's people writing about what things make them feel like, and getting paid out of your pocket and my pocket for that. It is the most worthless mockery of science you can possibly imagine. Here's an autoethnographical paper for you from Coker College in South Carolina. You and I did pay for this one. Called Oral Ritual. Ooh. What do you suppose this fascinating piece of science could be about? Let's quote from the abstract. I am fascinated by the potential for moments to reveal broader themes within media and everyday life. In this short article, I use autoethnography to explore the oral ritual of listening to a memorial tribute to media celebrities on nightly television news. Yeah, we paid for that. Should we go march and demand more of this? Is this what we want our money to be taken from us and used for? Apparently, a lot of people think so. I see lots and lots of people marching around with signs talking about how great government science is, but this is what government science gets us. This is what government science actually is. Do you want more of this or do you want less of this? Because I know which side I'm on. And that's not because I effing don't love science or whatever ridiculous thing. It's just because this is not science that's worth having. This is nonsense. While we're on the topic of nonsense that government creates in the field of science, let's talk about NRAs. Ah, NRAs are a fun one. NRAs were discovered in 1903 at the University of Nancy by a man whose name I'm going to butcher. I apologize, French pronunciation is not my strength. It is René Blondlot, or something to that effect. And he discovered the NRAs basically purely out of wishful thinking. He was attempting to polarize X-rays, and he recorded observations that everyone went crazy for. Hey, look, fantastic, a new form of radiation. Turns out it couldn't ever be duplicated outside of the University of Nancy, but everyone went crazy for it in France for quite a while. This is government science. What was this? It was a non-existent phenomenon, and it was observed only under entirely fake circumstances. Now, how did this happen? Well, it happened because a government researcher got excited about wanting a discovery and wished it into being. But how was it corrected? This is important. Let's look at this. Did we have the scientific consensus, like, step in and smash him like we're told happens? Well, not exactly. What happened was researchers attempted independently to reproduce his results. One researcher in particular famously fiddled with one of his experiments while the scientist was not looking and noticed that the results didn't change, and that was fairly embarrassing. But what happened was independent researchers attempted to duplicate the results and failed. No appeal to some sort of crazed scientific consensus was undertaken. But that's the sort of thing we're led to believe is the standard practice in science. Listen to these people who talk about the scientific consensus about, for example, once again, climate change. Whenever you hear the words scientific consensus, you know somebody's trying to sell you something. Because real science is not about consensus. If anything, real science is the exact opposite of consensus. Real science is about using logic and reason and observation and evidence to overturn consensus. When Einstein came along, just to take another random example, and he said that, you know, that Newton guy was pretty cool, but there might be some problems with his laws in these extreme cases. was that just part of the scientific consensus? Did the scientific consensus look at that and say, why, yes, we have always thought there were problems with Newton's law? Well, of course not. Newton's laws were the scientific consensus. And, as you'd expect, established physicists were pretty hostile to Einstein's ideas because they said, no, this is ridiculous. We know how physics works, we know how the universe works, and there's no room in it for these new things. But Einstein did his experiments, demonstrated his results, worked out the math and the logic, and he turned out to be right. And he didn't have to have some sort of, like, vote in the science parliament to declare him the new right science. He just did his work, published his results, other people performed experiments, and were able to confirm it. And over time, minds were changed. This is how science works. Science doesn't work because goofballs go out and wander around in the streets holding up signs about the importance of the scientific consensus. That what? What is? That's ridiculous. That's like Science by Soros. That's not what anybody needs. So let's all stop doing that. Can we agree on that? Can we get the science? No, we can't get the scientific consensus on that one either. So we're back to the climate change issue. Here's the thing with climate change. You don't ever hear any arguments in favor of government involvement in climate change. Note carefully that I'm talking explicitly about the people who call for government involvement in climate change. You never hear any arguments for this that don't depend on the science is settled and the consensus is such and such a thing. That's how you know it's bunk. The science on climate change is still very much not settled. There is no real consensus, and even if there were, that doesn't establish directly any given policy conclusions. These people are playing about three levels past what the actual science supports. Don't fall for it. And this one, now this one's going to get me in trouble. I already know you're going to get mad at me for this. But to a great extent, the vaccination people are in the same camp. Now I know, nobody write in and tell me about polio. Believe me, I know about polio. But the thing is, it's not the case that we live in a world that's filled with polio and people are objecting to getting a polio vaccine. We live in a world in which, in the first world, in the United States, in which disease is relatively uncommon by historical standards. I know it's still out there. And in which children are given a very large number of vaccines at a very young age. Now, that may be good, that may be bad. I'm not taking any position on that one way or the other right now, but to jump up and down and say that the scientific consensus has concluded that vaccination is good because polio is gone, that makes no sense. That's not relevant to the issue at hand. And that's what we're getting into now, is we're getting into this cult of scientism more than we're getting into doing actual science. Actual science, again, is about logic, reason, evidence, and method. It's not about yelling, it's not about consensus, it's not about voting, and it's not about your feelings. All right, I think that's going to do it today on yelling at you about science. Thank you for joining me once again on The Buzz. This is Darian Sumner from BumblingBees.net, and we'll see you next time.